Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. This show tonight is part 2 of the Jen Cruz interview. Jen Cruz is a leader and research team member of the group She Squatchers. And tonight we are going to pick up where we left off from part 1. So if you missed part 1, you go back and listen to that one first, because this will make a whole lot more sense. Jen from the She Squatchers is also a host of the radio show on Para-X Radio called The Journey, heard on Wednesday evenings. So please, when you get a chance, check out Jen and her team on The Journey. All right. Well, without further ado, let's continue on now with our interview with Miss Jen Cruz. Welcome back to the show, Jen. Tonight we're going to discuss a little bit about your encounters with ghost children, Bigfoot, and also the connection between Bigfoot and UFO sightings / encounters. So everybody sit back, grab yourself a bag of popcorn. Here we go. Did you say before we aired the show here that you were doing some type of a case with ghost children lately? Can you expand on that if you're able?
It was a while back. A man who was in charge of a museum on an Indian reservation had been listening to a radio show that I was on, and he had heard that I had helped these ghost children that had died in an asylum, and they were still there, and so had been asked to go there and help them move along, and I did that with as many of them that were willing to go. And when this man on this Indian reservation at the museum had heard this, he was like, "Hey, we have these children, these Native children that committed suicide here back in the days when they were, you know, taken from their parents forcefully and living in a mission school, as they did on the reservations. Some of the children committed suicide, and they are very active ghost spirits there." And he always felt sad for them that they hadn't moved on, and he felt maybe they were not at peace. So he asked this radio host if I would come down there and help them with their ghost children. So we made a trip down there, and I spent some time in that building and interacting with the children, and we found out that they were actually very happy to be there. They didn't feel like they wanted to move on. They were feeling peaceful and enjoyed being there for the most part, and ended up going to some other buildings that people came when they heard that we were there and asked for help with these spirits that were very hostile and aggressive. And so we went and cleared those buildings out of those. And it was very, very interesting. to be there, and so much activity in it. It just seemed like there was so much more going on there than there was elsewhere, it seemed.
So, Jen, do you ever find yourself bringing home with you attachments, and have you, or do you take not cautionary procedures to go about trying to have spirits stay where they're at before you travel out of there? Because you are like a beam, your frequency is obviously very high. It's obvious to me because I know what it's like to have many attachments on me, but I'm not as gifted to your level, but I still have issues with this all the time because somehow I'm going to assume you're like me, you're the Pied Piper of ghost children or even ghost animals probably that want to hang about you. So what do you do to reduce that so you don't have so many attachments on you?
Well, I don't do a lot of that work anymore. I did have a virus attacked my heart in 2017, and I had some damage done, and it was a long road of coming back from that. And I just felt weak all the time, and any little bit of ghost work that I did at that point, I really felt the drain.
Yeah.
And my friend who I had been friends with, she was the psychic that I looked to help me redefine and get my vocabulary adjusted to what other people called things. She told me that when you work with dead people, they take from your life energy. And I never felt that was true before because I was always so full of energy and I never felt that drain. But once I had a health issue, I felt the drain.
Oh, yeah.
I felt it big time. And she had kept telling me, if you work with dead people, it's going to shorten your life. It will shorten your life because you are giving them your own life energy. And I was like, no, that's not true, because I always felt like I had so much. And it wasn't until I wasn't completely 100% that I was really feeling it. And I was like, I just don't think I should do this anymore. There was one, when I was very ill, still coming back from that heart damage, a Native man contacted me. He needed help for his niece, whose baby had been slapped by a ghost.
Oh,
and
God.
It was very aggressive. And he's like, we need help. We need help. And I immediately said, I felt it was Medewin. And I said, wait a minute, is she connected with the Medewin? And he's like, no. And I'm like, I think this is having to do with somebody doing bad medicine. I that's what I initially felt when you said it, and I want nothing to do with it. They need to handle their own crap. And because I've dealt with that kind of thing before, and I'm not strong enough to do it right now. I was like, I can't. And he kept saying, well, just need help. Just can you look? And I'm like, fine. Take a picture of her. I want to see the room around her, just her, and just take a picture of the baby and the room around the baby. I want is just her and just the baby, and just take two pictures and send them. I looked at the baby, didn't see anything out of the ordinary. I looked at the mom, this guy's niece, and I looked at it for about 2 seconds, and I felt like I was going to throw up. It was instantaneous. I saw a man behind her, and I had to look away. It was so intense. I just felt immediately ill. And every time I looked at it, I was so ill. And I'm like, I can't even look at this. I can't even look at it. It's too much. And I gave it to my boyfriend, who is Native. And I said, can you look at this? Can you just look at it and see if you see anything? And he saw the man clear as day. Clear as day.
Was this man, clarify for me again, a ghost apparition? Or was this like...
He was
an apparition. Okay.
Yeah. Clear as day, and he could describe him. He was Native, and we found out that it was her father, and he was into bad medicine, and he had cursed. He told her that after he died, he was coming for her, and so that's what we found out after. We said, it's a man, and he's Native, and da da da, you know, and he's really strong. I can't look at him. I'm not well enough to look at him, and I'm like, I can't help you. You need to go get help from somebody else because I can't. And I really started distancing myself from that work at that point because it was draining me, and I couldn't afford to be drained at that point.
Yeah. So did that situation ever resolve?
It did. It did. They went and talked to the people from the tribe that would know about that. And I did do one thing. I did like a protection ceremony for them. And I said, I can do a protection ceremony for you. That's all I can do. And you need to get help from somebody else.
Yeah.
So
I have a question for you regarding, and I'm so sorry to hear that you're, you know, you have physical issues here, especially with your heart. My question is this, and if it's too personal, just say so. Did you have COVID? And the reason why I ask that is because it's no stranger to my listening audience that I had it pretty badly. And one of my biggest fears when I had COVID, because I was essentially near death a couple of times, pretty bad and long term, et cetera, still going through some of the effects of it. My biggest fear, and I even mumbled this to my husband during the height of it all, was that I said, because I have apparitions always hanging about me in some way or attracting the wrong thing to my life and to me, I was afraid that, and you said it, that they would finish me off because I was so exhausted, so drained from this virus that I just felt like I had no way to even protect myself in a place where there had been poltergeist activity, really, really, you know, compelling crap, you know, this past year or so. Have you had COVID, and what is your thoughts on spiritual beings or spirits in general taking advantage of people who are very weakened? What are your thoughts?
Okay, so as far as I know, I have not had COVID yet. The virus that attacked my heart was a simple cold virus, and it happened twice, two different times. The first time it left a little damage. The second time it left major damage. I was down to 20% heart function.
Oh.
And I mean, I could barely walk 20 feet without collapsing. It was bad. And it was a long road back to getting to where I felt like I could function and do my day to day without having to just sit and take a breath. Because I would, walking upstairs, I'd have to pause four times to catch my breath.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it took a long time. It was a long road back from that. So they said that if I caught COVID, they felt pretty sure that it would finish me off because I have a history of viruses attacking my heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as far as that goes, when I was still recovering from this, and I was doing much better, but not fully, I ended up visiting this woman at her job, and that I really enjoyed this lady. She's older. I hadn't seen her in a long time because I had been so sick, and I couldn't wait to go and visit her. She was working at a customer service desk, and when I got there, I looked at her, and I was like, what's wrong? I immediately could tell that she was not well.
Yeah.
And I said, what's going on with you? And she said, they don't know. I've been doctoring and they cannot tell what's going on. They don't know. They can't figure out what's wrong. There is nothing, they say, wrong, but there is something wrong. And I felt immediately that if I didn't do something for her, she was going to die. I mean, that was an overwhelming feeling that I just knew I need to help her right now or she's going to die. And I'm a Reiki master teacher, so I do energy work. So I immediately started, I just took a hold of her hands across the customer service desk. I just took her hands and I started giving her energy. And when I did that, I was probably maybe a couple minutes into it. All of a sudden, I felt it, the best way I can describe it, and I'd never felt this before, it felt like a swarm of bees.
Yeah.
But it was dark energy. It wasn't stinging, but it felt like a swarm of bees was swarming over my energy field.
Yeah.
And just attacking me all over. It was swarm, and zooming all over on top of me. And I gasped and I stepped back and I was like, what in the world's going on? And it just kept happening. And I didn't say anything to her about it. I just walked away, but I knew that it came from her. Like whatever was attacking her was now on me.
Right.
And and I took it away from her, and I walked away from her, and I immediately started having more heart issues. Like right now, I was, my heart was going crazy. I ended up at the hospital and they were looking at me. Yes, my heart was going crazy. They put a heart monitor on me to monitor me for 24 hours. They were trying to figure out what it was, but they couldn't figure out what it was. They couldn't figure out what was causing it. It was the same thing that she was going through.
Right.
They still couldn't figure it out.
Right.
And they kept asking me what my symptoms were. And as an energy worker, I know that I have more senses than other people do. So what I'm sensing, is it a symptom that other patients would describe, or is it not? Is it an energy that other people are not aware of? I don't know. Half the time, I don't know the answer to that question. So if I tell my doctors, this is what I'm sensing, this is what it feels like, and they look at me like I'm crazy.
Right, they'll put you in the nut house. I know. Yes, we're going to give you a prescription here for the nut house and a straitjacket. See, that's the whole thing behind picking up energies, especially negative. Did this woman ever say to you that once you touched her hands or something that she felt a little bit better, or did that resolve? She did.
She got better. Whatever was going on with her instantly resolved. She was well after
that. And it went to you. Okay, so then how did you get it off of you?
I was sitting in the hospital, and I said, well, I feel like this dark energy is zooming over me, like zoom, zoom, zoom. And I was trying to explain it, and they looked at me funny, and I said, okay, so that's an energy thing and not a usual symptom. You know, and I'm like, okay, I get it. I said, I'm an energy worker. That's my job. And, you know, so I feel energy. So I don't know sometimes if what I'm feeling is something that another patient would describe or not. So apparently not. So then I felt really helpless. I felt I couldn't get it off of me. The more I tried to increase my energy, the faster it zoomed on me. If that makes sense, it
would
swarm, swarm, swarm.
Yeah.
So every time I tried to raise my energy, it would swarm harder. Hmm. Like it was eating it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know what to do. I contacted a friend of mine who is a pagan.
Yeah.
And I said, I need help. I don't know what – I can't get this off of me. I don't know what to do. I'm weak. I need help. I'm in the hospital. They don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm telling you, I took this off this woman. And I told her what it felt like, and she says, wow. She says, yeah, that's an entity for sure.
Yeah.
Like a swarm of small entities that are eating the energy that you're giving off. And of course, that woman who I had gone to visit and took that off of, she had amazing energy. She was naturally just a loving, energetic person.
Yeah.
And so it was like feeding off of her. But when I gave her energy, I was a better food source.
Yeah.
So yeah. It came to me.
Yeah.
And I asked my friend, can you please help me? Help me. And she cast a circle of protection around me and got it off of me.
How long did that, I mean, did it come off immediately? Like, could you tell?
It stopped.
Could you feel it, like, lifting from you?
Yep, it was a very interesting feeling. It literally felt like dark energy has a physical sensation to me. It was dark energy that was zooming on my energy field like a swarm of bees.
Yeah.
Just zoom, 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 all over me. And it was instantly gone when she cast a circle around me.
Yeah, no, that I find that part I find scary and interesting all at the same time, because I can tell just from interviewing you, you've got a very high spirited energy here, and talk about munching ground. You're like an afternoon snack and evening, you know, all put together. But, you know, the thing is, Jen, it's like, how do you protect yourself and how do you put a barrier around yourself to keep some of this stuff off of you? Have you learned how to do that?
Well, I had always had a barrier up around me. My energy field alone was a barrier. But I was, again, not well. I was still recovering from that heart issue.
Yeah.
So I wasn't 100%. But inside my intuition told me I needed to help this woman or she was going to die.
Yeah.
And so I just did it. I didn't think about myself in the moment until after it happened. I thought, what was I thinking? I should never have done this.
Yeah.
But well, she would, I mean, I feel confident that she would have died if I had not.
I know, but you're a very, it's obvious to the listeners and to me, you're a very genuine soul. and we like people like you a lot. And so it's kind of like you're the type of person people would like to be around, the type of person we would feel safe around, and especially with your gifts, the type of person we could learn something from as well. So I just find that amazing. So you broke out of this for a little bit. I would assume that you might occasionally dip back into it, even though it physically is harming you to some degree. And then the big one here, you went, how did you manage to get yourself into doing Bigfoot hunting?
Well, that, you know what I tell people now? I tell people this is what happens when your kids grow up and leave you unsupervised.
No, that's for sure. Yeah.
Actually, I had a paranormal radio show, and I found myself at a Paracon convention where Lauren Coleman, the cryptozoologist you see on TV all the time, having to do with Bigfoot interviews and information about Bigfoot. He was there, and he has the International Cryptozoology Museum in the state of Maine. So if anybody gets that way, go visit his museum. I can't wait to go there someday. Anyway, he was at this Paracon convention, and I was able to get a sit-down, face-to-face interview with him in person for an hour. And I did not know anything about Bigfoot. I think I'd maybe seen a few episodes of Finding Bigfoot on TV before that. I really hadn't spent any time thinking about Bigfoot, not even enough to decide whether or not I thought he was real or considered it. I guess I always assumed it wasn't a real thing. And so when I sat and talked with him and interviewed him, he was filled with so much good information and so scientific. I was very surprised. He surprised me. Although I'm a psychic medium, I actually have a very logical and skeptical mind about everything. I have to experience it for myself or it's not really all that true yet. And so when I was listening to him, he appealed to the scientific, skeptical part of my mind, and I was intrigued. He had an idea for what he thought was the recipe for success in interacting and getting close to Bigfoot. He thought women would be good for the job because, well, and lots of different reasons. He said all these women who did the work with the great apes, like Jane Goodall and her work with the chimpanzees, he said that women have a natural good rapport with the great apes, and he thought that could extend also to Bigfoot. So he thought women were naturally suited for this, that men have a pheromone that they give off that the great apes just don't like, but women can get in closer and be trusted. He also said that a lot of the times when people have sightings of Bigfoot near roadways, they're never usually family units, a mom, dad, and kids out for a stroll. It's usually just one single Bigfoot, a younger male, who's probably out doing the things he's not supposed to be doing by the people. He's not supposed to be near. And he felt that these younger male Bigfoot would be a little bit more inclined to come in closer and take some look at some ladies if they were out in the woods alone without men, dogs, or guns. And so he thought that would be the recipe for success. And, you know, in the moment, I jokingly said, hey, pick me, I'll do it. And I was just joking, of course. But by the end of the interview, I volunteered right on the air. I said, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to get some ladies. We're going to go out and give this a try. I'm going to try it. And so that's how She Squatchers began.
My God. And so, I mean, okay. So I have to, the one time that I was up in, I think, Vancouver, I know that I can't even remember if the place was called Hot Springs or something like that, something with springs on it. And they had Bigfoot signs all over the place. And I looked at one of the signs and I pointed to it and I said to my husband, oh, yeah, I'm sure this is just a tourism thing to get people to come up here. And I just heard about a week or so ago that they're, especially Bigfoot. I don't even know what the right word is for that, but they're littered all the way up and down the California coast. And of course, I think that they're in places that you have been. What kind of states have you been to, Jen, to hunt for Bigfoot?
Well, we've been very blessed, to be quite honest with you. We've become quite popular in the Bigfoot community, which I didn't even know there was a Bigfoot community of people. But there is, and it's quite large, actually. And there's all these Bigfoot conferences that go on in just about every state. And we've become quite popular with them. So a Bigfoot conference will have me come in and speak about the things that we found, sharing our evidence that we found, and the stories that we've experienced of our experiences. And when we get to do that, it affords us the luxury of getting to go Bigfooting in all these different places that we would probably never get to do that any other time or any other way. So we've literally been traveling from coast to coast doing these conferences and Bigfooting in different places. We've gone in Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, of course, is where I live, North Dakota, Illinois, did I say Kentucky, Kansas, yeah. Missouri, Nebraska, we've been to Nebraska twice, and not last year, but the year before, we got to go out to Washington State for a whole week, and we did Bigfooting out there for a conference.
Did you get up to Vancouver at all?
We did not.
Oh, you didn't. Okay, yeah.
We were over in Ocean Shores for the Sasquatch Summit in Washington. And this year we're going back there for, they're actually putting on the conference in the Yakima Reservation. The Yakima Valley Bigfoot Conference will be happening in October. And so we'll be there for a week for the conference, and as well as going Bigfooting in the area. They're going to take us around. And there's a fire tower there that is for the fire for the fire marshals to be up in the tower looking for fires in the woods. And they don't man it 24 hours a day anymore because the Bigfoots were surrounding the cabin.
Oh.
So I said, hey, can we stay at that cabin? And they said, yeah.
Oh, my God. Talk about brave. No wonder they call you the She-Squatchers. So here's my question, which a lot of people – Bigfoot, different sizes, shapes, looks. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that there are variations in Bigfoot, just like there's variations in people. And what we're seeing up north in the Midwest here seems to be a lot different than what they're finding down like in Florida. The skunk ape seems to be quite different than the Bigfoot that we have up north. And they seem, you know, smaller, a lot more aggressive down in the south there than what we have up here. And I haven't been Bigfooting down in Florida. I haven't seen the skunk ape or encountered the skunk ape. But from just what I hear from others about it, I'm not exactly sure that I want to go down there and interact with the skunk ape.
So height-wise, what's the average height for perhaps? You hear different reports, height.
You do hear different reports. And there actually is, somebody was telling me that there is a equation that you can use based to figure out how big they are based on their footprint. And I don't know if there's any fact to that or not, but I think it's an interesting idea that some are saying just based on the footprint, you can tell if they were 7 feet tall, 8 feet tall, 10 feet tall, 12 feet tall. You hear variations. I think the average one is probably 8 to 9 feet tall.
So down in Indiana, where I lived for 22 years and then came back to Minnesota, one of my first acquaintances with your show was hearing you talk about going down to Indiana to do some Bigfoot discovering. Did you ever find anything down there? Are you even able to disclose what part of Indiana we're talking about so that we don't have a surge of people, you know, aimlessly going into those areas? What did you discover down there?
Well, we met a gentleman down there. His name, he goes by the name Squatch Man, but his real name is Greg Yost. And he's quite a tall gentleman. I think he's 6'7" himself. Hmm. And he's got a huge long beard. He looks like he could be in ZZ Top. And, you know, he is definitely one of those people that you want to go Bigfooting with. You definitely want to go. When we were coming back from a conference and where we had met him and become friends with him, we knew he lived in Indiana. and we were in Kentucky. And we were planning to camp our way back, so we were going to stop at different places along the way that just felt like we should stop at and maybe have a look at. And we were driving through Indiana, and Jenna says, "Hey, Jen, why don't you contact Squatchman and see if he can recommend a place that we should camp at in Indiana?" And I'm like, "Great idea." So I messaged him and said, "Hey, we're going to be, we're in this location right now. We're driving back up north through Indiana. Can you recommend a good place to camp? And for two girls who are alone, a safe, good place for us to camp."
Yeah, good luck on that one. I'm trying to visualize which forest or which area you decided to do this in. Continue.
He said, "Why don't you go camp at my hotspot?" And I was like, "What? He was going to tell us where his hotspot is?" That was just blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And he did, and I don't feel like I can tell that where exactly that was, but it was in a state park.
Yeah.
And when we got there, there was not another soul camping there. We were completely alone.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure that there were park rangers in the park during the day, but we were alone at night. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting because I had never been camping in a place like that where there is nobody else. There was nobody else there.
Yeah.
It was a little interesting that way. But he came, he brought us firewood, he built us a fire while we put our tent up, and then he took us out into the woods and showed us all of his cool finds and his gifting stump where he gives gifts to Bigfoot. And we left gifts. We left some food, and being part Native American, I left a prayer and a handful of tobacco on the stump, which is what natives do and when they give an offering. Later on, we went back and checked the stump. And some of the food was gone, some bites had been taken, and the tobacco was gone.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Now, how do you know that a Bigfoot actually took that and not some other animal?
We don't know that. I guess we don't know that, but he brings people out there quite often, and they have interactions.
Have you?
And of course, he has pictures of Bigfoot out there.
Oh, he does. Yeah. And it wouldn't put it past me. Believe me, you hear reports all the time. I would just, the one place that I felt like if there was going to be a Bigfoot coming out was when my husband and I were in the Redwood forest in California, up there were the redwoods, and we were driving at night, leaving a restaurant, and it was pitch black. And I just said, I told him this. I said, "I am so creeped out," I said, "right now, being in this vehicle in pitch black woods, blah, blah, blah." I said, "It wouldn't surprise me if something came out of the trees or, you know, came at us or whatever." I said, "Let's get out of here." And we found ourselves just like driving kind of erratically fast just to try to break free from the environment. But were you, when you camped there overnight, did you not have any fear or reservations at all about what was lurking around you?
To be honest, I was a little freaked out by being there completely alone, because he stayed with us and had dinner. You know, I had stopped and got some Subway sandwiches on our way there. So we had those and we ate together and sat by the fire and talked for a while after we had gone out hiking with him in the dark. And then we sat and ate our Subway sandwiches and then talked for a while. And then he left because he had to work in the morning. So he left us there. Mm. But when, you know, he has this kind of relationship, so to speak, with the Bigfoot out there. And so when he got out there and he took us into the woods, he yelled out, "Hey, hello, my friends. These girls are my friends." You know, and he was trying to introduce us to them and letting them know that we were welcome there and that we were friends. And so that kind of helped a little bit. But when he left, I did feel apprehension, because it was the trees. I have never seen such large trees in my life. They were so tall.
I know.
So much taller and bigger than the trees that we have here in Minnesota, because most of Minnesota was logged in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So our trees here are fairly new.
Yeah.
But these are old growth forests, and the trees were, everything just was massive. Even the spiders were bigger. It was really creepy.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's different. It's you know this as well as I do. Depending on where you live, territories are very, very different. Have you seen, and I don't know if I asked you this, have you seen a Bigfoot visually?
We have. We have a thermal of one where we were in Tennessee for the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to take out the conference itself had wanted us to take people out on a hike. And another Bigfoot researcher from that area selected the location, one of his hotspots, to take these people out on its, and it's on a mountain.
Yeah.
So they're hiking through the mountain. And I actually, at that time, had a really bad case of bronchitis. And didn't feel like I could be hiking up a mountain because I could barely, I was hacking up a lung.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so my team, Jenna and Tammy, went with them and took this group out on this day hike. And I said, give me the GPS coordinates when you get there and I'll remote view it. So they did. And because I had been asking him for the GPS coordinates prior to this, because I said, listen, I don't go into a woods that I haven't remote viewed yet. I don't do that. It's stupid for me to do that. It's like going in blind. It's not how I do it.
Yep.
So, but he didn't understand at that time that that's what I was talking about. He gets it now. So he never gave me the coordinates. So we never even knew where we were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So when the girls got there, they sent me the coordinates of where they were. And I started remote viewing and marking locations on the GPS for myself. And then I said, listen, I'm seeing Bigfoots there at certain coordinates. I said, maybe we could go back up there together tonight. So they finished the hike with the group. And then they came back and we went out for dinner. Jenna, Tammy, and I, the She Squatchers, with Matthew Dell from MIGRO, the Mountain Empire Cryptid Researchers Organization. And we decided we were going to go back up there and check out some of these spots where I had marked Bigfoot to be. And so we drove up to one of the spots that I had marked, and we were parked the car, and I said, you know, tried something new that we'd never tried before. I still had signal out there. So I pulled up the map, and I tried to remote view from the car. And I said, are there any Bigfoots here right now? And all of a sudden I saw one appear and I did like a little measurement and I said, that's like 30 feet.
Mm.
There's one 30 feet that way, just right now. And so Tammy quickly grabbed the thermal camera, which was Jenna's. She had never really used it before. She knew how to turn it on. But she turned it on and she aimed it that way. And sure enough, there was one there.
Oh my God. How do they look on thermal? What does it look like on thermal?
Well, it depends on what setting you have on your thermal. So there's different settings. And at that time, we were using black hot setting, which is skin or something of body temperature will show up as gray or black.
Okay.
And then hair shows up as pitch white. It's bright white. Anything that is hair. So like your eyelashes, your hair, your eyebrows, anything like that will be white.
Interesting.
Just stark white. So it's really easy for you to pick out something hairy.
Well, especially if you said if it's hair and it turns out white, right? So you should be getting a whole body there full of white, correct? Yep.
Yes, and that's what we were seeing. And Tammy was all excited. She's like, oh my gosh, it's there, it's there. And she said, how do I make this thing record? How do I make it record? And you know, it's dark. You can't see anything. You don't know what the buttons do.
Yep.
And Jenna was, it's Jenna's piece of equipment. She's the only one who knows how to hit the button in the dark.
Yep.
Because it's got quite a few buttons. It's the FLIR Scout, which is a one eye. You look through one eye.
Yeah.
And so Jenna grabbed it and hit record on it. But before she could get over there, Tammy saw it, lift its arm up, and then reach its other arm over and scratch underneath its elbow. And she saw all the hair hanging down from the arm. And she's like, it was just incredible. But it was done doing that by the time we got it to record. We got about, I think it was 13 minutes of footage of it there.
Yeah.
And we put that on our YouTube channel. She Squatchers Official is our YouTube channel. And I think that video is called something Tennessee Night Expedition is what the video is called.
So I have a question that's been coming up quite often since I was never really into the UFO experience until someone pointed out to me at a conference that he believed I had experiences, but my memory was erased. And then ever since that point, I've been having all kinds of stuff happen to me. So I'm going to flip this to the Bigfoot question here. The connection between Bigfoot, multi-dimension, potential UFO experience. What are your thoughts? You've always hear about, yeah, the tracks led here, and then all of a sudden they stopped, and we have absolutely no idea where it went or anything like that. What are your thoughts about the UFO slash Bigfoot connection?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story about being contacted by another Bigfooter who wanted me to remote view for him. And it was as if it was in response to a wish that I had put out there. I had a question in my mind that I wondered if my remote viewing was so successful in Minnesota because I'm from Minnesota, that I'm part Native American. Were my ancestors helping me to see, because I have, you know, connections with ancestors who would have lived all over the state. I was wondering if that it was that connection that was making me so strong in that. So I wondered if it would be as strong to look elsewhere where I probably didn't have ancestors who had lived there. So I was wishing that I could look in a place not here. And within a week, this man contacted me, and he was from North Carolina. And he said, I'm a Bigfooter out of North Carolina. I'm wondering if you could remote view a spot for me and just tell me what you pick up on it. And I said, sure. I was like, heck yeah, this is what I wanted to do. So he gave me the GPS coordinates to a park, like a state park. And I started remote viewing the area, and it was hard for me at first that they had different kinds of trees than the ones that we have here. And that was throwing me off at first. And so I at first it seemed difficult for me, and I stopped, and I kind of recentered myself later that evening and went back to it. And then I was able to start seeing, and the information started coming. And I saw this Bigfoot jumping up and down on the edge of this lake right at the wood line. And he was jumping up and down. Like, you could see that. And I said, and I marked the GPS spot. I said, there is a Bigfoot that comes to the water's edge right here quite often, and he doesn't hide. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hide. If you watch that spot, you'll catch him. You'll catch a video of him. And but there's a lot of them behind him that do hide, and they're hiding very well. And I'm seeing them hiding. And then there was a field nearby, an open field. And I saw them walking out into the field and looking up and calling. It was like they were calling for help. And I saw a UFO come. And I didn't know if I should tell this man that, because I thought, well, that's really out there. I don't, you know, I really trust what I see in remote views now because of the experiences that I've had, and that even the most bizarre information being actually true. So I really do trust what I see. But this was the first time I saw them communicating with something else, mm-hmm. and like a UFO coming down. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, why are they, it's like they were calling out for help. And I'm like, why are they calling out for help? And the information that I received was that they want to move. They want to move. They want to leave this area, but they can't because they're surrounded by people.
Interesting.
And they're calling out for help from those above to come and help move them to a different spot. Interesting. And so I told the guy, I ended up deciding to tell him, yes, that I'm going to tell him. I said, if you watch this field, I think you're going to be seeing some UFOs there. And because they seem to be calling for assistance in help moving. They want to move away from here for whatever reason, but they can't because they're surrounded by people. You know, it's a nice wooded area. It's very, you know, there's lots, plenty of room there for them, but they wanted to leave. And I also identified an area where they crossed the road. I said, they actually live over here, and they cross the road right here quite often just to get over to the water. And I said, if you watch this spot, they cross there quite often. And, you know, as soon as I sent him this, he immediately started sending me videos from the ground, like taken from the ground. He's like, that is where they crossed the road, actually. That's very good. he'd been investigating this area, and he already knew that that's where they crossed the road. And so I was just confirming what he already knew. And when I told him about the Bigfoot going out into this field and calling up for help and a UFO coming, because they want to move, he said, "That's very interesting." He said, "Actually, we have been watching UFOs come there. We have been watching that happen. They are coming there." And he said, "Actually, the people have started to do some building in that area, and their space is getting smaller." He said, "I wondered if they would want to move, and I wondered how they'd get out of there."
When he described to you that the UFOs were coming, did he describe the UFOs as a metal object or a light, like a really light ball? You know, everyone has a different name for that. But did he tell you what type of UFO was actually lifting them out of there?
He did not. And I should have probably asked that question, but I did not.
Well, one of the I just recently saw this, and of course you can believe everything you watch on TV. But yeah, I mean, not. But the reason why I asked that is I had seen something very recently on television about someone with their thermal who captured a Bigfoot. But what was really interesting, in the dark, of course, but what was interesting about it is there was a big blue, shiny, not shiny, but glowing orb-like ball that was literally kind of like in the chest area or something along that lines. And it was bright. And then they said, you know what? This is where they got into this whole thing about UFOs and the connection with Bigfoot, is because they couldn't figure out how on earth the tracks were stopping and what exactly was lifting them out of there. And then they captured this image with that big, bright, blue, glowing, orb-like ball and said, "You don't suppose there's, quote-unquote, a connection?" So I just didn't know if you had delved into that or had experienced anything of that, since you could see the UFO coming and potentially lifting them out of there and moving them to a different area. I find that very, very peculiar, but also very interesting. What are your thoughts on that?
A lot of Bigfoot reports or witnesses talk about the lights. And it's very common, actually, for people to see these orbs of light flying through the air near or about the same time as they're encountering the Bigfoot sighting.
Interesting.
And it happens more often than not. And even as a Bigfoot researcher, you know, you can listen to somebody tell their report of encountering Bigfoot or having a Bigfoot encounter, and you can ask them, "Tell me about the lights," and they'll just be like, "How did you know?"
Yeah. How did you know? But exactly what is this light, other than something obviously very UFO-ish in nature? Continue.
We have encountered the lights.
You have?
On multiple occasions.
You have?
We have. And there was one, we had received a report of a Bigfoot sighting in Minnesota, in this marshy bog area.
Yep.
And somebody had seen this Bigfoot walking from one set of trees to the other set of trees in the daytime. And it was out in the middle of this marshy bog. Yep. And so we wanted to go investigate that. Couldn't get permission to go out there because it's a marshy bog. They said, "You could fall through and die."
Yeah.
Can't go out there.
Yeah.
So we couldn't get permission to go out there, but we could look at it from the road. Okay. So I decided, you know, Jenna has this really cool unocular device. It's a night vision camera that can see really far away in the dark. And so I thought, we're going to go out there in the middle of the night when there's no traffic on the road. We're just going to park and use that device and see if we see anything moving back there. And so we did this. We parked along the side of the road. I turned off the car. She was in the passenger seat. And she rolled down the window, turned on the camera, and started just observing it. Now I'm watching it with my bare eyes. She's watching it through this unocular device, which zooms it in and turns the night into the day. And so we're just sitting there, and I'm watching to see if I see anything in the dark, and all of a sudden I start seeing these lights back there. Now, this whole area, I viewed it from above. It's little patches of woods in the middle of a marshy bog. There's no roads back there. There's nothing back there. So there would be no reason for there to be lights unless they were just lights. So I said, Jana, can you see the lights in the camera? And she took her moment to find them. She's like, yeah, there they are. So she could recorded it. And so we're seeing the lights. And we actually, that's on our YouTube channel. The video is called Strange Lights. And our YouTube channel is called She Squatchers Official. But Strange Lights, you can watch the video. And they move through the forest. And it was very interesting. They were white in color. And, you know, in the video, you can hear me saying, is there a road back there? I don't think there's a road back there. I knew that there wasn't a road back there. But, you know, my logical mind is thinking, is it a car? Because it was a white light. But, you know, rechecking again, there was nothing behind there. There was no reason for there to be lights back there. And then as soon as we decided that we had had enough, we turned off the camera and we were about ready to go. When the car, which had been turned off for quite some time, all of a sudden the lights turned on in the car, on, off, on, off, on, off. And it was like making this clicking noise as it did it. And we're just still, and then all of a sudden there was a bright white flash of light right outside the car. And I was like, holy crap, we gotta go.
Yeah.
And Jenna was like, you didn't do that? I'm like, my hands are here, didn't do anything. And so we just went. And, you know, I just got the feeling we need to go. You know, that we need to get out of here. I don't want to have that kind of an encounter.
Yeah. The lights on the car, when they were flashing on and off, now, did you say that you were just getting into the car and it was doing this by itself?
We never got out of the car.
You never got out of the car, but started doing that, right?
Yeah, it started doing that. We were sitting in the car with the car turned off. Her window was open so that we can get a clear view into the field and over that marshy bog.
Yeah.
And we were just watching from the car. And the car had been turned off for a long time, and we were sitting on the edge of a highway. It would have been, if a car would have come, it would have been dangerous to be standing outside the car.
Yeah.
So we never got out of the car. And when that happened, you know, I was about to turn on the car, but hadn't done anything yet when the lights went on, off, on, off, on, off. And then that flash of light hit the car, really, like it lit up the whole car.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to say it killed your battery and then you couldn't get out of there because obviously it drained your battery on the car. So I'm amazed that in a situation like that, when you hear of especially anything electrical, if you want to go to that realm, that it's electrical, you hear all the time how this stuff just all of a sudden just you can't get the car started. I mean, of course, that would make for a good movie, which, of course, they have all the time, drama. But you had no problem starting your car, right?
Right. We started the car and we left.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, so we weren't there to look for lights. We were there looking for Bigfoot, but what we saw instead were these strange lights.
Interesting.
And, what's interesting is that the local people who live in that area, when we talk to them, they talk a lot about these lights. And they talk about the green lights specifically, the ones that are the same color as the green light in this traffic light.
Interesting.
And, you know, if you can imagine a traffic light being plucked out, that color of the light itself floating around is a little ball of light all over.
Yep.
We've encountered those. And the locals talk about, they have a saying, when the green light appears, you know, Bigfoot is near.
Interesting.
And so that was very interesting. And we're talking about, again, Native people on an Indian reservation. They're a lot more comfortable with this kind of thing than they are in the areas off of the reservation.
Well, and obviously incredibly insightful about this stuff. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm just, you know, my mind is just rolling through like a Rolodex, all kinds of, you know, things. But I have heard about the green lights, the blue, like I said, the now blue lights, unless the camera was on a particular setting that just turned that that ball of blue light green. It's just our, you know, blue. And so, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about this and going, okay, why would it show that color? And I had a gal, I was at a haunted bed and breakfast probably about a year and a half ago, and she had overheard me talking. I was there kind of doing a mini investigation, and she overheard me say something, and she came up and she started showing me some of her pictures and had wondered if on a cabin like lake area, and had wondered what it was. And I was sitting here observing the colors of the lights that were showing up in her picture, but not just like some people right now are saying, oh, it's a camera flare. No, I'm not talking about camera flares that are green and blue and all that. I know all about camera flares. This wasn't that at all. And just like what you were seeing, did you actually see these lights zip around, or were they more slow motion? What did you notice about the movement of these lights? Ooh, well, this is getting to be a good nail biter here. I had no idea that we were going to go into part three. I've only announced part one and two, but guess what? We're going to part three. So, on that behalf, you know where you need to go. Stay tuned, as Paranormal Encounters podcast series will pick up again on this episode with Ms. Jen Cruz of She Squatchers in part three. Thank you and good night.